Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
Virtually 5 minutes past three. Mark Kermode, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, how are you?
You're on at 3:05. This is a rarity.
I know, there's going to be breaking news very
almost
soon.
Almost certainly. This from Daniel, Simon and Mark, or possibly Frank. I thought I'd get
please don't start on that.
I thought I'd get in contact as I listen to you on the bus every week on my MP3 player. The podcast of Mark's Film Reviews makes for great entertainment on the way back from college.
Excellent.
Each week. Everything available via the 5Live website. Please read out my film game entries. They're not really entries anyway. As I don't think Mark will have much of a clue of guessing these. But
are we still doing this? This has become like just humiliate Mark, hasn't it?
Nothing wrong with that. Now, the only thing is, there's two German films and an Austrian film.
Okay.
Which should we do? Should we do a German one?
Okay. I'm not going to get them anyway, because I kind of, you know...
Do the Austrian film, because apparently you mentioned it last week.
Oh.
Family. Can I borrow some eggs?
Funny games.
Golf.
Funny games.
Pain. Death.
It has to be funny games. Can I borrow some eggs? There we go. Yeah, well, that's...
Okay. Right, that's one out of one.
Yeah.
Run, whoops. Run, run, whoops.
Run, Lola, run.
That's it.
Right. Hey!
I hadn't even finished. That's Run, Lola, Run, the German film. So two out of two. This for the hat trick.
Oh, no. Go on.
I don't even understand this.
Yeah.
GDR, coma, not. GDR, mummy. GDR, daddy, firework. It's a German film with an English title.
Is it Goodbye Lenin?
It is Goodbye
Lenin. Look at that! I'm sorry, that's set me back up again.
Three out of three. Emma says, just like to help you correct Mark, Office Space is a great movie that has Jennifer Aniston in.
Okay, well, Jennifer Aniston's in a new movie this week, Derailed, and that's put her career right back where it belongs.
And Emma says, what's going on with the download? I'm listening on a very fast connection and you sound like a gagged Dalek. Emma, I just have to tell you, that is exactly how Mark sounds normally. The download is working absolutely fine.
Thank you very much.
Mayo at bbc.co.uk on the email 85058. If you've seen any of these movies and feel moved to join in, 85058. We'll be looking at Derailed and Grizzly Man. Walk the Line... Zathura, a space adventure. We have a competition as well for the Orange British Academy Film Awards on tour. Do you just want to explain what that is?
No, I don't know.
Okay, well,
that would be the BAFTAs then. But officially the BAFTAs apparently.
We sorted that out earlier, so we obviously know what we're talking about.
Yes.
Anyway, we'll come to that. The box office top 10 this week at 10, Just Friends,
which is, you know, just really...
Well, I don't know.
We've done it a few times. I have to stop saying you know, apparently. Just Friends, it's no good.
Get Rich or Die Trying with my mate Fiddy at 9.
Your mate Fiddy, yes. You know, why... I did it again. Why get Jim Sheridan to direct that movie? It doesn't really make any sense. And apparently this is based on the life story of... is he 50 Cent or 10 Cent or 20 Cent?
He's 50 Cent, obviously.
Well, he's not very good at playing himself, that's all I can say.
Jarhead at 8.
It looks like all those other movies about war that it references, like Apocalypse Now, and specifically like Full Metal Jacket, but just crucially it isn't. I wonder exactly what the point of it is. It's not that it isn't stylish, it is. It's not that Jake Gyllenhaal isn't fine in it, he is, but I just... You go, yes, and...
Oh, that's me. 7, Underworld Evolution.
Well, clearly the interest in Arcate in Rubber has now been, you know, satiated. Its brief spell at the top of the charts is now being replaced by the climbing down the charts, because everyone's realised that actually the movie itself is rubbish.
At 6, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
Still hanging in there. It's obviously done fantastically well at the box office. As we've said before, very good for the underage viewers, perhaps not so good for the more grown-up viewers, but I do think it's a fairly indestructible tale, and it would take an awful lot to make it unwatchable.
Number 5, Memoirs of a Geisha.
A great, big, romping Hollywood costume melodrama that some people have wrongly interpreted as a Japanese text with problematic Chinese involvement. Forget all that stuff. It's a Hollywood movie. I mean, it is. That is what it is. There's no point in complaining about its inaccuracy in terms of its Asian origins, because it is a Hollywood movie. Zhang Ziyi, I think, is very good in it, and it's nice to see her... You know, doing so well in a mainstream film, and obviously Michelle Yeoh is terrific. But it is from the director of Chicago,
laden with nominations and awards. Number 4, Brokeback Mountain.
So this is the clear favourite to sweep the board at the Oscars, and already I'm starting to wonder, therefore, whether that's going to backfire against it. I think it'll probably get Best Film and Best Director for Ang Lee, but whether or not Heath Ledger may now be edged out by perhaps Joaquin Phoenix for Walk the Line. You know, Jake Gyllenhaal's a strong contender for Best Supporting Actor, but then, of course, George Clooney's got some groundswell behind him for Syriana.
I think... when you've seen Brokeback Mountain, it's not immediately clear who's best actor and who's best supporting
actor.
You definitely said Jake Gyllenhaal?
No, I wouldn't. I would have said that they should both be up for best actor, but of course, presumably what they're doing is that they're thinking there's no point in nominating two people in the same category because they'll just fight against each other. It's the Thelma and Louise issue. You know, what do you do? Do you put Sarandon and Davis in different categories so they can both win, or do you make them compete against each other? And another very fine example of this is The Constant Gardener, in which Rachel Weisz has been put up as best supporting actress. Other than at the British Academy Film Awards, where she's best actress. Clearly, she is the leading actress in that film. She carries the film. I don't think that Heath Ledger is the main actor and Jake Gyllenhaal is the supporting actor, but that's how they've broken it down because that's awards season.
That number three, rumour has it.
Just completely all over the place. What on earth has happened to Kevin Costner and, well, Jennifer Aniston? We'll get to
later. She's in loads of films.
Yeah, I know, but sadly, none of them are any good, except for that one, what's it called? Office Space. That was referred to a second ago in a listener's
email. Is that okay?
I haven't seen it.
Well, this is Emma says Office Space is a great movie that Jennifer Aniston is in.
I'm pretty certain I haven't seen it.
Like a gag, Dalek.
Thank you.
Number two is Munich, with Oscar nominations now.
Well, and the surprise... I mean, I was surprised, because as far as I remember, it's up for Best Director and for Best Film, and I really am surprised by that, because it's not a contender in those areas. I sort of feel it's like Hollywood going, you know... we really ought to give Steven a nomination because otherwise he'll take his ball away and he won't play with us and he'll throw all his toys out of the pram. And it does feel a bit like that. It's, you know, I think it's very, very even-handed. I think the people having a political problem with it are completely misguided. But the dramatic problem is it's an awfully disjointed film that can't decide whether it's a thriller or an issue movie, and consequently it ends up being neither. I do, however, think that Eric Banner is very good, because I think he's a very fine actor and he does the best with a role which is pretty cheesy.
The UK's number one, Fun with Dick and Jane.
No fun at all. The original was kind of all right. The remake is absolutely terribly perfunctory. And Jim Carrey, having redeemed himself with things like Man on the Moon and The Truman Show, is just back in gurning loon form, pulling those rubbery faces and waving his arms and legs and teeth and nose around in a way that just makes you want to smack him and go, stop it, it's not funny. However, if it's number one, clearly people disagree with me, but hey, they don't know nothing.
A stack of correspondence to get to before we start the reviews, which we'll do in a few. Should we start with Walk the Line in a few moments?
Should, yeah.
Okay. This from Andy. On the subject of Mark's film review, he says, this is something I love to hate. I download it to my desktop. I listen to it when I have time and the opportunity to shout at the speaker. The best bit is when I delete it and the system says, are you sure you want to send Mark Kermode to the bin? So and I shout, of course I do.
Of course I do.
By the way, here's a film teaser, because he hates it so much he wants to be a part of it.
Okay.
Two weddings, one funeral, one christening.
Hang on. Two weddings, one funeral, one christening. Oh, I don't know, it'd be like The Godfather or something.
Exactly right.
Oh, is it The Godfather?
He says if you can't get it from that, there's always the horse's head. So anyway, Andy, just stay with us just a little bit longer. And this, we might as well get this sorted, just because otherwise we'll be getting emails on it between now and
go
four.
On.
I'll just do these. Rob Wilson, can you ask Mark if Werner Herzog was really shot during his interview for the Culture Show last night? John says, does Mark think it would be too cynical of me to suggest that the shooting incident in the Werner Herzog interview was set up by the man to enhance his reputation? So first of all, explain what happened and then answer the question.
I went out to Los Angeles to interview Werner Herzog, who's the director of Grizzly Man, which we'll review in a while, and we got to his house and we said, can we just do an establishing shot of us going into your house? And he said, I don't want you to shoot the outside of my house. I don't want the people to recognise it, because he has a funny accent you'll hear when we do the clips. He lives on Wonderland, incidentally, which if you know anything about Hollywood history, Wonderland has a history. He said, if we go up the end of the road, we can stand on a promontory, look down over LA, we can shoot it there. It's a completely non-specific place. So we went up the end of the road. We were standing there on this promontory with a camera crew, and the next thing, there was this bang and a whiz, and he got hit in his abdomen just below his belt. It looked to me like a firecracker had gone off in his pocket, because, you know, something went... And I said, what on earth's happening? He said, oh, we are being shot at. We should leave. He's like, we should leave. Well, there's like an option. We might stay and finish. So we legged it back to the car and we got back to the thing. And he kept saying, oh, it's nothing. It's not. I've been shot in Peru. You know, when you were fired at in Nicaragua. That's a... He said, it's not a significant bullet. And I was really worried about this. And then halfway through the interview, I said, this happened. Would you mind just checking to see you're all right? And he opened his trousers and he did indeed have a wound. And so all this was actually included in the piece. And since then, a couple of people said, oh, you must have been set up. Because, you know, Herzog's whole mythology is he's the man who shoots up the side of volcanoes that are about to erupt. He's the man who, during the filming of Fitzcarraldo, three extras got hijacked by a warring tribe and one of them got a spear through the throat. These things happened to Werner Herzog. But absolutely, my hand on my heart. I mean, firstly, how on earth would we have set it up? Secondly, no, of course
not. No, I think the suggestion is he set it up.
No, and I can guarantee you he didn't set it up because I stood next to him when it happened and I stood next to him and looked at the wound. He was, you know, wounded and bleeding, and the place that we were at was just standing by a roadside, and just some crank with an air rifle took a pot shot. I don't think they were aiming at him because it was...
Why would anyone take a pot shot at you?
No, not at me, just a group of people with cameras. I mean, it was that kind of time. It's Los Angeles, you're on Wonderland, the light's going down. Oh, look, there's a bunch of people with cameras. I've got an air rifle. But I absolutely promise you, that's what happened. And he kept saying, it's nothing. And, you know, he said, oh, when all this, I've been in the Andes. I said, I grew up in Finchley. Believe me, to me, this is really scary. And he said, it is not a significant bullet. And we spoke to him the next day and he said, well, yes, it is a bit worse than I thought. But the most amazing thing about it was he barely flinched. To him, it was like, hey.
It'd be interesting to see how 50 Cent would have reacted.
Yeah, well, I said to him, you are European cinema's answer to 50 Cent. And he said, who's 50 Cent?
Oh, well, there you go. Okay, so we'll do our reviews in just a moment. Stacks of correspondence to get through as well. We'll kick off with Walk the Line, a Johnny Cash biopic in just a second. 316, Bobby. Most of the attention this week, I suspect, is heading towards Whackin' Phoenix and my friend Reese Witherspoon. For the Johnny Cash biopic.
Did you enjoy interviewing her?
Well, I did. It was depressingly brief, but that's the way these things are when you're dealing with American companies who don't understand what national radio is all about. They think you're all broadcasting just to a tiny little village.
Yes,
so they give you a couple of minutes. But, you know, we had about 8-9 minutes or something.
Okay, fine. And she was nice in those.
If I'd had time, I'd have mentioned Freeway.
But you didn't.
It was the last of my questions.
Okay, so Walk the Line, which, you know, multiply nominated and, of course, scored a resounding victory at the Golden Globes, where Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon both won actor and actress in a musical or comedy, because obviously in the Globes they split them up. They have, you know, serious, dramatic, and then for musical comedy. Biopic of Johnny Cash, Johnny Cash's early life. And it's the story of Johnny Cash from his childhood to somebody who gets married and then decides to become a musician, signs up with Sam Phillips, who hears something in his voice, despite the fact that he is playing with two mechanics who, by their own admission, can't hardly play, and Cash himself can't hardly sing. He then becomes part of the Sun Records roadshow, so goes on tour with Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis Presley. And whilst this is happening, finds himself in the company of June Carter, who, of course, he famously ended up marrying after proposing to her on stage. Now, in the film, when he proposes to her on stage, you think, this, you know, obviously this is fairy tale and this is made up. Of course, there are some ellipses and some, you know, things that are made up in the film, but actually the proposal on stage is not one of them. But the heart of the film is the relationship between Cash and Carter, brilliantly played by Phoenix and Witherspoon. Here's a clip. Now, that is one of three moments in Walk the Line in which the film does the thing that all biopics have to do, and at which point they risk ridicule. She says, you can't walk no line. And, of course, he ends up writing Walk the Line. There's another moment earlier on when Johnny Cash sits down and watches that film inside the walls of Folsom Prison. And then we see him strumming a guitar, feeling tormented and going, but I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die, which is, of course, the classic Johnny Cash line.
Can I just say on that point, that specific line, earlier that you mentioned it,
yeah.
I shot a man in Reno
just to watch him die.
That must be, and that was 1955, that was his second hit. If a gangster rapper did a line like that,
yeah,
there would be howls of protest.
Oh, it is. I mean, it is extraordinary. And it is basically the thing that came to crystallise what was then thought of as Johnny Cash's sort of outlaw renegade status. Because, of course, I mean, he wasn't an outlaw. He was arrested a couple of times, but he was only ever in prison like one night. And there's a lovely line in the film in which when he does get arrested and his dad says, now you won't have to try so hard to convince people you're a criminal. And there's another moment when after he's in a complete state and June Carter has seen him in this complete state, and then she's then on her own, thinking about him in this terrible state, and she says it, oh, it burns, burns, burns. And of course, he then goes on to start writing Ring of Fire. Now, if you're a fan of pop biopics, which I am, you know that this is the difficult moment, like that awful moment in The Doors when Ray Manzarek goes, da 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 da, hang on, da da, excuse me, can you just leave me for a minute? Then you hear him playing that, you know, the break. There's another line in the Buddy Holly story, which I think Walk the Line is closest to. I love the Buddy Holly story. It's directed by Steve Rash from 1978. Gary Busey, fantastic performance as Buddy Holly, in which he sang all his own songs. And in fact, they released a soundtrack album with the Crickets playing the backing and Buddy and Gary Busey singing the Buddy Holly stuff. And it's brilliant. The roller derby sequence when they're doing Rocking Around with Ollie V, and you can tell that they're playing live, is great. But it's there's a scene when they're in the back of a car and one of them's singing this song and it goes, if you knew Cindy Lou. And one of them says, you know, that just doesn't sound right. Oh, dear. What's the name of that girl you've been dating? And then they go on to write, you know, Peggy. So, fine. You always have to do those moments in pop biopics. And if you get away with them, it's an indication that the film is working really well. The fact that Walk the Line does three of them, and at no point do you think, oh, no, I'm sorry, I've had it, is an indication of just how good it is. And the reasons it's good are primarily Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon are just dynamite in those performances. Joaquin Phoenix does a brilliant job of playing not only the physical manner of Johnny Cash, because he did have a very strange physical stance. It was, you know, his shoulders were hoiked, he held his guitar in a way which to some extent I kind of suppose was similar to Eddie Cochran, kind of like the rifle stance, but he also had a peculiar walk. It was like uncertain and yet unstoppable at the same time. And when he starts singing, he has this kind of faltering, ordinary, very airy sort of voice, but during the course of the movie his voice seems to drop right down into his boots as Johnny's soul descends into the Ring of Fire. And halfway through the film you're thinking, is he singing this or is that Johnny Cash? Because that really sounds like Johnny Cash to me. And of course all the way through it is Joaquin Phoenix. I did wonder whether he'd had a little bit of electronic enhancement, which, you know, would be possible, but he does it brilliantly. Reese Witherspoon apparently says that she wasn't a singer before this, and yet she does the June Carter stuff, and in a way she's got the harder role, because June Carter is seen to some extent as a sort of flibbertigibbet, somebody who was a musical comedy act.
We'll do some more on this in just a moment, and if you have seen it, a number of people have already. Your correspondents, welcome, of course, mayo@bbc.co.uk. First of all, this email from John McCafferty. Simon, I watched Walk the Line a couple of weeks ago and quite enjoyed it. Then I read the new authorised biography of Johnny Cash by Steve Turner, which is wonderful, by the way, and realised that Walk the Line is terribly watered down mm-hmm. in typical Hollywood fashion. Sure, great acting and music, but all the critical parts of the story are sadly omitted or swept under the carpet.
OK, well, I'd like to deal with this because I know that the criticism that's levelled against it is you don't see the real darkness of the Johnny Cash character. What you see is a man, you know, troubled by inner demons, very much like the setup in Ray, that early on he loses his brother and he kind of is blamed for the loss of his brother, and then he descends into drug addiction and drinking and angst about, you know, there's a moment when Jerry Lee Lewis, when they're all in the car together, and Jerry Lee Lewis says, as he really did in real life, we're all going to hell, because Lewis was particularly conflicted about, on the one hand, he had this Southern church upbringing, on the other hand, he was playing what he seriously believed was the devil's music. Now, I think you have to take pop biopics, not as documentaries, as pop biopics. And considering the amount of possible glossing over that could have been done, what I thought Walk the Line did was exactly got the right balance. It doesn't do it as a documentary. Bear in mind that the story had a lot of input from Cash and Carter as well, so obviously they are doing to some extent their own version of their story, and it is a fairy tale. But the reason I forgive it for that is that the most ridiculous fairy tale invention, which is the onstage proposal, is true. And it is true that although after Cash and Carter got together, that wasn't the end of his problems by some way. However, that narrative works perfectly well for me in exactly the same way that the Buddy Holly story, which in fact leaves out an entire band member and changes people's names because there was issues about who owned the copyright to that story, still works as a story. It's not a factual document. Yes, it plays fast and loose with the truth when it feels that it needs to, but it's like the Ballad of Bonnie and Clyde's version of the Bonnie and Clyde story. It is a romanticised version of their story told by the prince and princess of the fairy tale themselves. And the other thing I'd like to say, and this is important, the music is produced by T-Bone Burnett, and I get terribly antsy about seeing bands playing in films and not looking like they're playing.
T-Bone Burnett is a genius and has been a fantastic producer for years.
Yeah, he really is. And the moment at which I thought, I love this movie and it can do no wrong for me from now on, is when they start playing as a three-piece and the guy who's playing the double bass is playing the double bass, and he's got the notes stuck up the side of the double bass, which if you play double bass, you'd know that is how you start out playing the double bass. And then they're on stage and he starts slapping. Now, I play slap bass, and I have seen people miming playing slap bass, and I just want to take the bass and smack them with it. Watching somebody actually get slap bass playing, cat gut string playing right in a film was nothing short of miraculous for me. And I thought, that's it. Nothing you can do from now on is going to mess this up. You've actually got a double bassist looking like he's doing it. Yes, fine. It's peculiar and quirky to me. But for all the things about, oh, well, you don't get the real dark side of Cash's character, you don't get the real underbelly of what happened, what you do get is somebody really playing the bass. And a fantastic fairy tale that takes its lead from a true life romance and does just enough compression and elision to make it work. And I thought it was a real return to form for James Mangold, whose early work, Heavy and Copland, was great, but then went off and did nonsense like Identity. And I think he's really found his feet. Phoenix and Carter are... Phoenix and Witherspoon are Cash and Carter. I've now seen it three times. I loved it to bits, and I don't care that it's not absolutely factually on the money. It's a pop biopic, and for me, it's up there with the Buddy Holly story. It's up there with Slade in Flame. It's much better than Ray, for example, which I think is much more earnest and worthy, but much less magical.
I wanted more music. I mean, I think that,
oh really?
Yeah, I wanted more of the stuff on stage because he does that so well.
And he does do it so well,
particularly
doesn't he?
When he does Walk the Line, and particularly when he does Ring of Fire, which haven't got the horns on it, which the single version.
Yeah,
I'm thinking,
yeah.
There was a moment where I thought, actually, this is better.
Yeah, it's really, really fantastic.
And I suppose that there may well be now Johnny Cash revival. If you go into most record stores at the moment, they've got lots of best ofs. They've got the soundtrack. They've got the aforementioned Steve Turner biography of Johnny Cash. And what's interesting about him is that a lot of people say he kept his best music to the last 10 years of his life. All the stuff he did with Rick Rubin is quite stunning. You know, that would be another story altogether.
Yeah, and of course there's all the connection with Nick Lowe. And yes, there is a whole other story still to be written about that. But for what this is, I mean, I don't say this lightly, it is up there with the Buddy Holly story, and if you know what I think about that movie, I cannot praise it highly enough. It's just terrific.
Your T-Bone Burnett question, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
T-Bone Burnett was in the Coward Brothers. Who was his other brother? They didn't release many records.
I don't know.
Elvis Costello.
No!
Elvis Costello and T-Bone Burnett.
Oh, well, there we go. I should have known that.
John Fletcher, this is in Darlington, related to a conversation from a couple of weeks ago. Let's get this straight. I'm supposed to listen to Bananarama instead of The Doors?
Yes.
I think not.
Yes.
Stick to slagging off I Heart Huckabee's, Mark. At least you got that right.
Oh, come on. The Doors are so dull. Jim Morrison was such a... Yeah, it's absolutely college music. It's, oh, you listen, I've just read some Baudelaire. I've got to go and lie down in a bath. Oh, I'm into black magic. No, really. Oh, dear, I better go back to my mummy and daddy and get some money from them. It's middle-class nonsense. And you know, wonder how bad it is? Camille Paglia loves The Doors. It's all you need to know.
Werner Herzog, your story earlier about when you were interviewing Werner Herzog and someone took a shot at him. Alexi in Worcestershire is wondering whether there could be an Oliver Stone movie based about this.
I think Oliver Stone is already on the news saying that, in fact, if you look at the film, you can see that it was a triangulation and somebody fired the shot from over on the grassy knoll.
Maybe there should be a selection of movie titles for the Oliver Stone directed story of how Mark was shot out with Werner Herzog.
Well, anything that gets us off the movie quiz, although I have had a resurrection with that this week.
Listen, you're on 4 out of 4. I wouldn't grumble.
Yeah.
More movie reviews to come, and your comments welcome. It's 5 Live, 3:32. Mark Kermode is here. We talk movies between now and 4 o'clock. Just mop up some more correspondence. Walk the Line, we've talked about. This is E from Leighton. I thought Joaquin Phoenix deserved an Oscar over Russell Crowe in Gladiators, because, of course, he played the Emperor with a strange name of Commodus. And apparently, the story is that Johnny Cash liked Joaquin Phoenix from that moment, having been a fan of...
Right, and apparently the story is also that Joaquin Phoenix has not seen Walk the Line.
Apparently, he doesn't like singing.
No, he's not singing himself. He's scared to watch it. A bit Woody Allen, that.
Matthew in Glasgow. Apparently, Werner Herzog pulled Joaquin Phoenix out of a car wreck last
week.
Yeah,
I heard this.
Is there
well.
Anything the man can't do?
This is apparently true. Apparently, he saw a car that had broken down. I mean, this is secondhand that I heard this, but I heard that the car had broken down and he pulled somebody out of it, and it was indeed Joaquin Phoenix. But he is a man who attracts mythologies, and I can understand exactly why it was therefore that people start saying, well, surely some of this stuff is made up. It's just, he just attracts this stuff.
Ian Fox, listening online in Milwaukee. I saw Walk the Line a few weeks ago and it was very enjoyable. I've never been a huge Joaquin Phoenix fan, but his performance in this movie was really excellent. I'm not sure how accurate the story is, but as a based on real events movie, it is well crafted. Yeah. Also, could you ask Mark if he's seen Nochnoi Dozor or Night Watch, a Russian horror movie?
Yeah.
It hasn't been released here in the US. I want to know if it's any good.
I thought it was overblown. And you have to look really hard to see that it's Russian. I mean, it is Russian, but it looks like a sort of sub-Matrix movie.
Nick says, Mark recommending the Buddy Holly story. I watched it. It's rubbish. I'm right. He's wrong. It's not Joaquin Phoenix. It's Hokeen. Otherwise, you're both brilliant.
Hokeen?
That's what he says.
Don't be silly.
I know. It is Joaquin.
It's Joaquin, I'm sorry, you know.
He says it's
Scarlett Johansson.
Mike in Ludlow, just with reference to your earlier caller who's getting a poor reception on the internet, I was experiencing exactly the same. I've switched to something called a UK version of 5Live, which is providing a much clearer sound. Your listener may wish to
Are you listening to the Swedish version? They translate as we do it, don't we?
The grizzly man. What else is new, Mark?
Grizzly Man. Shall I do that now, or do you want to do, you want
it? No, do it in English and do it now.
Okay, fine. Grizzly Man, the new award-winning film from Werner Herzog, who I think we have covered in some detail. Basically, the story is there's a guy called Timothy Treadwell, that wasn't his real name, who lived among the grizzlies in Alaska for 13 summers, and in the 13th summer was killed by one of the grizzly bears, along, tragically, with his girlfriend. The footage that he shot, the video footage which he shot, was then basically taken on board by Werner Herzog, who saw in Treadwell's story a story of humanity in extremis, in the same ways, if you're a Herzog fan, Aguirre, the Wrath of God, or Fitzcarraldo, does, you know, stories about men up against nature. Treadwell basically believed that nature was fundamentally benevolent and that the bears were lovely and cuddly and nice. Herzog comes from a completely different school, and as the director of that culture show piece that I did, you said, you know, it's like Disney getting mugged by Nietzsche, and that's exactly what it's like. But listen to this clip, because in order to understand the film, you have to understand, on the one hand, Treadwell, who was a failed actor, who apparently had come second in line to play the role that Woody Harrelson ended up playing in Cheers, you know, the barman role, and having failed to do that, then went out and lived with these grizzly bears, and Herzog, who is the great Germanic nihilist. And the whole of the voiceover proceeds with that peculiar dialogue.
Your head in after a while.
Well, no, but it's lovely. On the one hand, you have Treadwell with this, and he calls, there are these huge bears, and he calls them like Mr. Chocolate and Fudgy and lovely, funny names. And Herzog is narrating like this. And there are moments in it that are ridiculous. There are moments in it that are laugh out loud funny. There are moments in it that are really, really tragic. One of the things that happens is it turns out that at the point of the fatal attack, Treadwell had his camera running, although he had the lens cap on, so there's an audio tape of the fatal attack, and Herzog filmed himself listening to this and saying, I'm not going to put this in my film. Now, in the days of reality television, in which people just go further and further down the sewer pipe to put anything in front of an audience, I think it's a very moral and correct decision of Herzog to say there is such a thing as private moments, and this is not going to have a place in my film. What is in his film is a portrait of a man who wants to be a bear, who believes that there is actually no tangible gap between us and them, and who, in the end, meets a tragic end, but en route goes quietly and, I have to say, very entertainingly bananas in front of the camera amidst some awe-inspiring natural backdrops. So on the one hand, you have this very odd, very quirky, very tragic tale. On the other hand, you have something which really is a profoundly insightful look at the human condition. You have a movie which I think finds Herzog back on top form. You have a documentary that demonstrates that the Nick Brumfield school of look at me documentary filmmaking is not the be-all and end-all. And it's a really exceptional piece of work. It's really something. And it's funny and dark and vibrant and lively and strange and weird and ultimately very tragic and sad.
So he's back on tip-top form, apart from the slight gash he's got at the top of
it's
his
not
head.
It's not a slight gash, it's a wound.
Mike in Heaton Moor in Stockport. My wife and I went to watch a cock and bull story on Mark's recommendation.
Here we go.
Was it in the? Was it even in the top 10?
Well, I was imagining that it must be playing in a limited release. It's fantastic. It's absolutely wonderful.
I would like to know why he thought it was so good, as in my opinion, it was without any storyline, any decent acting, and any humour. We walked away believing that Coogan and Bryden are attempting to recreate a new British film dynasty in the mould of Emma Thompson, Hugh Laurie and Kenneth Branagh. Sadly, Coogan and his acolytes are not up to the job, and Kermode has fallen into their romantic trap. The film was awful.
The film is a brilliant adaptation of Tristram Shandy, and if that's what you think of the film, I guarantee you'd hate the book. There is, of course, always room for more than one opinion. As I always say, the difference is that mine's correct. In terms of an adaptation of Tristram Shandy, it is a really, really smart movie. But in terms of it not being funny, I mean, if you don't think the cock and bull story is funny, then I just don't know what to say. It's like not finding Love and Death funny. It just is funny.
Well, you can't just say it just is.
Well, it just did.
Because people
it just is funny.
Well, it might not be.
You know that bit in Love and Death when he's putting the rifle together and it all falls apart in his hands, right? Did you laugh?
I did.
Fine. But why did you laugh? Because it is funny.
Oh, okay, you've won me around. 5 pairs of tickets to give away in association with the Orange British Academy Film Awards on tour.
That'll be the Oberfars then, would it?
No, it won't. Details in a moment, but Bobby can go first. By the way, some people are probably saying, why isn't there a profile of you online? Scott and Durham, would it be possible to ask the good doctor which Roubette's song or album he was after to replace his worn-out copy? He's right about them, by the way, and wrong about King Kong.
Bless you. It was Where It's At, which is the first album. And actually, somebody has very sweetly sent me a vinyl copy of Where It's At. And I now don't have your contact details. If that was you, please email us telling you your contact details, because I'd like to mail it back to you, because as it turns out, I have now found my old vinyl copy of Where It's At, and in fact somebody else then subsequently sent me a CD of it, which was very sweet. I mean, I'm happy to keep, because I love the Roubette, and I'm happy to keep, but I don't want to have made anyone part with Where It's At, because it's such a great album.
What a strange man you are. Okay, Walk the Line is done, Grizzly Man is done, what else is new?
Also out this week, North Country. North Country, Issue-tastic Entertainment, also up for awards, a Best Actress nod for Charlize Theron and a Best Supporting Actress nod for Frances McDormand. Based on, well, the story is Charlize Theron is a miner. I know, I didn't believe it either. A miner in Minnesota who works in a mine in which she is discriminated against hideously by her chauvinistic workmates and by the chauvinistic management, who allow her to be horribly harassed until such time as she takes a class action against them. The woman whose story this is based, or it's inspired by real events, Lois Jensen, has said in The Guardian today that this movie has given me back my life, and I'm very glad that she likes it as much as she does. For the rest of us, it's really much more of a curate's egg. First half of the movie works very hard to build up a sense of the location, of the mines, of the gritty blue-collar milieu, to establish credibly an environment in which it would indeed be horrendous for women to work and to be discriminated against in this way. What actually happened in the case ended up taking over a decade and was finally settled in 1998 in a complicated and I think out of court and slightly undisclosed settlement. Of course, for the purposes of the movie, they need to tie it all up a lot more neatly. So what happens is you get the first half of the movie in which there's lots of acting and lots of earnestness, and Frances McDormand is great, she always is. And the second half of the movie, it goes to court and it is absolute nonsense. It is all that sort of courtroom piffle that only American movies do, in which the law seems to play no part whatsoever, but it becomes nothing other than grandstand theatricals. Now, we all saw the OJ stuff on television. We know how mad American courts can be, but believe me, they are not this silly. The moment in which Frances McDormand is wheeled in a state of disarray, shall we say, which is meant to be a terrible, heart-rending moment, I really didn't know whether to laugh or cry. Charlize Theron's a great actress. However, this, look at me, I'm acting, I'm really suffering, I'm really looking muddy, I'm really... It's fine for the first half of the movie. Second half of the movie, it all goes out the window. And the greatest crime that the film commits is, by the end of it, this very serious issue with a very serious story behind it has been reduced to TV movie of the week melodramatic nonsense. And you think, I don't care. And that, for me, is a real failing. As I said, the woman whose case inspired it loves the film. And she says that it has done great things for her. And for that, I am glad. But for the rest of us, if you have two brain cells to rub together, you will feel insulted by the pat, cod, nonsensical nature of what they see has to be the conclusion. I mean, it is absolutely perfect demonstration of Hollywood being unable to deal with anything complex. It's like the Braveheart view of history. You know, it really does end up with the equivalent of Mel Gibson on the rack shouting, "Freedom!" It's like, no, 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 and thrice no.
Don't forget, if you'd like to enjoy all the fun of Friday Afternoons again, it's all downloadable. If you want, if you've got an MP3 player or something and you want to have it as a podcast, go to the Five Live website. All the details are there, and iTunes will help you out as well. Len, we'll offer you this before you get into our Jennifer Aniston movie.
Go on.
This is to make, he says, this is to make Mark's weekend an easy one. And remember, you're on of absolute full house at the moment.
Okay.
Four out of four. I think you'll get this.
Okay.
Colour, black and white, colour, black and white, colour, black and white, colour, black and white, colour, machine gun, end.
Schindler's List. No, 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 hang on, hang on, hang on. No, no, hold on, do it again. Colour, black and white,
colour, black and white, colour, black and white, colour, black and white, colour, machine gun, end.
Oh, 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 oh.
Everything hangs on
no,
this.
No, I know, I know, I know, I know, I know. That's really annoying. Oh, what is that? What is that? What is that? No, I'm not going to get there. Go on, annoy me.
Lindsay Anderson's If.
Yes!
Oh, dear, what a completely...
Yeah, sorry, that is disgraceful. That is really disgraceful. Yep. I didn't get that. You should give this job to James King. I am actually shamefaced about
that. I can forgive you, you know, even preferring the Rubettes over the Doors, but, you know...
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Well, with that, you know, giving it some kind of perspective. Derailed.
Dumbo, big budget, sub, straight to video, erotic thriller, ripped off of Fatal Attraction, Indecent Exposure, Deadly Seduction, all those other movies with those two name titles. Clive Owen is a businessman who enjoys a flirtation with femme fatale Jennifer Aniston. And I'll just say that again, femme fatale Jennifer Aniston. Not kooky, ditzy, lovable, friendly Jennifer Aniston, but femme fatale Jennifer Aniston. During which he is torn between his loyalties toward sexy femme fatale Jennifer Aniston and his troubled home life. OK, let me do this. Point one, Jennifer Aniston is not a sexy femme fatale. Point two, Clive Owen is not an American. Point three, Mikael Hufstrom is not Adrian Lyne or Greg Dark or Jack Mundrum. Point four, the audience is really not that stupid. Point five, Vincent Cassel is French. I'll give you that. Otherwise, avoid.
OK. It sounds as though the only good one it was The Office Space. If you're looking for great Jennifer Aniston pictures.
I have to say, it's not something that I've made a mission, but I will now. The Good Girl?
Yeah.
No, that was rubbish, actually.
Mark says, have you heard of the Thora Birch horror film Dark Corners? And he sounds like he knows what he's talking about, or he's in it. Written and directed by first-timer Ray Gower, soon to be released. I've seen the press video. It looks like the one to watch. Be interested to learn if Mark has any further info. I bet you Mark Hammond's in it.
I haven't seen it.
No,
but you
I
know.
Bet he is.
Should and we look him up on the IMDb?
He just wanted a mention.
Yeah.
And it succeeded.
And there it was.
Movie of the week, Mark.
Well, I absolutely love Grizzly Man, but Walk the Line is one of my movies of the year.
And the
already.
And the soundtrack album is terrific as well. Okay, Mark, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
All the details on the website if you want to enjoy all the fun again. We're back on Monday at 1 o'clock. Drive comes next. Have a terrific weekend on AM, on digital and online. You're listening to Five Live.